Planes powered by GE Aerospace Technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
Internet providers, big and small, have agreed to help the Biden administration expand broadband access to low-income households. But the effort has hit some hurdles.
So far, about 11.5 million households have signed up for this program. The administration believes there are about 48 million eligible households.
And U.S. markets extend last week's sell-off. What's behind the volatility? Plus, why smart buildings could come with some risks. It's Monday, May 9th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. U.S. stocks extended their sell-off today, with all three major indexes falling to their lowest levels of the year to date. The Dow dropped more than 650 points, or 2%. The S&P 500 fell 3.2%, and the Nasdaq shed 4.3%. Bitcoin also continues to fall, pricing below $31,000 this afternoon, according to CoinDesk. That's down 55% from an all-time high of $67,802 in November. The cryptocurrency is on track for its worst five-day stretch since March of 2020. Markets reporter Akani Otani says investors are retreating from almost everything.
I think a lot of investors are very worried about what the Fed is doing and how it's going to affect the economy, because the Fed's in a really, really tricky spot right now where it has to slow down the economy enough to get inflation under control, but it has to do that without actually tipping the economy into recession. And a lot of investors seem to be not so sure that the Fed's going to be able to pull that off, coupled with just everything else going on in the world right now. You have more COVID lockdowns in China, for instance, continued supply chain disruptions, commodity prices have been very volatile. All of those things are just contributing to a pretty uncertain environment.
Akani says investors will be keeping a close eye on the release of the Consumer Price Index later this week for more clues about inflation. The Federal Reserve warns that high inflation coupled with a rise in interest rates poses a near-term risk to the U.S. economy. In its semi-annual financial stability report, the Fed says the combination of higher rates and prices could make it harder for households to pay their bills, while businesses could struggle to borrow money at higher costs. But the central bank says many households are still in better shape than last year, thanks to a strong labor market and high savings rate, along with pandemic relief programs and rising home prices. Tyson Foods is reporting soaring profits this quarter after raising prices for beef, chicken, and pork. The company says its price increases are consistent with rising costs, but the company's net income rose to $829 million from $479 million a year earlier. The meat industry's profit margins have drawn criticism from the White House, lawmakers, and regulators who say it's using its scale to inflate costs. In the Philippines, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., the son of the country's former dictator, is on track to win the presidential election. Preliminary results show he has secured 27.3 million out of about 67 million potential votes, more than double that of his closest challenger, the outgoing vice president. Our Southeast Asia reporter, Feliz Solomon, has more.
This election is hugely significant for the Philippines. Ferdinand Marcos Jr. is the son of the country's late dictator, and many Filipinos feel that his ascension to the presidency is a big setback for democracy. It's been 36 years since his father's regime was ousted in a popular uprising. The late Mr. Marcos oversaw an era of rampant corruption and human rights abuses, but the opposition says that Mr. Marcos Jr. has downplayed that history and whitewashed the family's name. There are a lot of Marcos supporters who believe that the family never did anything wrong and that they were essentially victims of conspiracy or a smear campaign. There are other Marcos supporters who believe that he should not be held responsible for the sins of his father. So they think maybe his father was corrupt, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he will be.
The winner of the election will succeed populist president Rodrigo Duterte. Feliz says the next Filipino leader will face a lot of challenges.
The country suffered a lot from the COVID-19 pandemic. The economy shrank more than 9% in 2020, which was its biggest drop in decades. The economy is very reliant on exports, services, and foreign remittances, and all of those fell starkly during the pandemic. So people were really suffering. The economy has a long way to go to climb back to pre-pandemic levels. That was a big issue for voters in this election. Another challenge for the next president is going to be balancing relations between Washington and Beijing.
China's trade with the rest of the world slowed last month as COVID-19 lockdown shut factories and crippled supply chains. According to China's Customs Bureau, exports rose 3.9% in April from a year earlier, the weakest export growth in nearly 2 years, and imports were flat. Economists say the pullback shows that demand is dropping as high inflation eats into consumer spending in the U.S. and Europe. The White House says it's lifting tariffs on Ukrainian steel for the next year to help boost Kyiv's economy amid Russia's invasion. That will roll back a tariff that former U.S. President Donald Trump imposed on broader steel imports. The U.S. only purchases a small amount of Ukrainian steel, but the mills have begun producing again, and about 1 in 13 Ukrainians works in the industry, according to the U.S. Commerce Department. Meanwhile, continued opposition from Hungary is preventing the European Union from finalizing a proposed ban on Russian oil. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen traveled to Budapest today in the hopes of sealing the deal after a weekend of negotiations. The Commission has pledged aid and offered to give Hungary more time to wean itself off Russian oil and find energy alternatives. Other nations, including Slovakia, the Czech Republic, Bulgaria, and Croatia, are also asking for European aid and more time to adapt if they support the embargo. Coming up, 20 internet providers have agreed to improve access to high-speed internet as part of the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure law. But it's proving hard to reach those that could benefit the most. We'll have more on that after the break.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. By empowering the brightest minds, GE Aerospace is reimagining engine design and advanced aircraft systems, developing hybrid electric engines and technologies compatible with alternative fuels like sustainable aviation fuel. GE Aerospace strives every day to invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
The $1 trillion infrastructure law approved by Congress last year includes billions of dollars in funding for repairing bridges, roads, and other transit projects. It also includes funding to expand broadband internet access, something President Biden spoke about frequently during his campaign. The administration is offering a $30 a month subsidy to low-income households to defray the costs. Speaking from the White House this afternoon, President Biden said,
"High-speed internet is not a luxury any longer. It's a necessity. And that's why the bipartisan infrastructure law included $65 billion to make sure we expand access to broadband internet in every region of the country, urban, suburban, and rural. Everywhere.
Many of the 20 internet providers, including big names like AT&T and Verizon, as well as some regional providers who have agreed to help expand high-speed internet access to millions, have also offered to slash rates. But despite their efforts, it's been a challenge to get people to sign up. For more on that, I'm joined by our White House reporter, Ken Thomas. Hi, Ken. Thanks for being here.
Hi.
So, Ken, this has been an issue the president has been focused on for a while now. How has he characterized the scope of the problem, and why has he made this a priority under the administration's infrastructure plan?
During his campaign, President Biden often spoke about the challenges that millions of Americans faced in accessing wireless internet. During the start of the pandemic, he would often talk about the families who would need to stop by parking lots of fast food restaurants so their children could do schoolwork. Biden has likened internet access to the need for a telephone for generations past. And so they tried to make this a priority in the infrastructure bill that was signed into law last year. The way the program works is that the broadband section of the law includes about $14 billion to pay for a program called the Affordable Connectivity Program, or ACP. And that's what this White House event was about. The administration was able to get commitments from 20 internet service providers to improve their subsidized high-speed internet plans, either by lowering the price or increasing the speed of the service. So eligible households can get a subsidy of $30 a month through this program. And in some cases, that may mean they can receive high-speed internet for free or at a much more affordable price.
Now, Ken, the program you mentioned, the Affordable Connectivity Program, has actually been in place for a while now. What has been among the challenges for the administration in getting people to sign on?
So far, about 11.5 million households have signed up for this program. The administration believes there are about 48 million eligible households. So there's a very large number who have yet to hear about the program, who have not signed up. And so what the administration is trying to do is reach those households through a number of ways. They can use the power of the federal government. This program is available to households whose income is 200% or less than the federal poverty guidelines. And then they can also access it if they receive Medicaid, SNAP, or a federal Pell Grant, that kind of program. And so all of these federal agencies are going to be reaching out to these households to tell them about the program. And we also expect some of the providers to publicize it. So AT&T, Comcast, Verizon's Fios service, Charter Communications, they're all part of this. And so they're expected to try to publicize it as well.
From a political standpoint, Ken, what will this mean for the Biden administration?
I think from a political standpoint, this is a way for the administration to point to a very meaningful, user-friendly aspect of the infrastructure law. There was a big debate at the time over what constituted infrastructure. Republicans would often say it just should be for bridges and roads and highways. And Democrats tried to argue that infrastructure should be much broader in its scope. And I think this is an example of something where broadband maybe is not part of a definition of infrastructure traditionally, but Biden and Democrats would argue that it provides a service that everyone needs now to succeed. And so if you have a large number of Americans who can't get internet access, that this is something that is important for the administration to try to reach through this new law.
That's Wall Street Journal White House reporter Ken Thomas. Ken, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks.
And finally, in cities, smart buildings connected to the internet are becoming more common. Some use facial recognition software to bring you up to your floor, movement sensors to turn the lights on and off, or sensors on the walls to detect impurities in the air. Real estate investment firms are embracing smart tech because it promises to make buildings more sustainable and cheaper to run. But our real estate reporter, Conrad Poutsier, says that while these smart features may make buildings more efficient, they raise other problems.
Hacking is a huge risk for these smart buildings, and it's really a challenge that everyone has to deal with. Part of the issue here is that a lot of these office landlords aren't incredibly tech savvy, right? So they embrace these smart buildings because they're supposed to be energy efficient and they're supposed to be appealing to tenants. They buy all this technology, wire up their buildings with sensors, but then they don't have a lot of employees that are actually good at cybersecurity and know how to secure this sort of stuff. And often they're very keen to save money and keep their expenses low. So that's another reason to not spend money on security. And that's a really bad combination because you have these incredibly smart buildings that have all these vulnerabilities.
And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace Technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.